Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
It's been an interesting week spiritually, a lot going on around the world. We have Rosh Hashanah started this past week, I think Wednesday night, leading to Yom Kippur, which is, I think, this Friday, for those of you who are of the Jewish faith, or at least raised that way. We've got the Muslim festival of Muharram, I think it's pronounced. That was Thursday or so. And yesterday was my birthday. So it's all, you know, very very celebratory. Let me get a swallow of water here. You know, as far as places to come on Sunday morning are concerned, I've always thought that this, here, the Woodruff, or wherever we were holding our services, is a pretty positive place to be. I mean, we don't judge anybody based on their lifestyle. We don't tell anybody that they're going to hell. We don't believe that what we teach is right and what everybody else teaches is wrong. All right? In fact, we believe that whatever anyone believes about God, about themselves, and about the world, as Peter's song just stated so beautifully, will determine how their life goes, because the universe, we believe, responds to our beliefs by giving us what we expect. So that's a pretty positive message, assuming you expect good things to happen in your life, which hopefully we do. However, as a result of the way I have practiced this teaching in my life over the years, all right, trying to walk the talk as well as I can, I have been accused more than once of being overly optimistic by people, okay? For example, I have been told that I'm fooling myself when I expect good things to happen, when things aren't looking very good. Even good friends who are not in this teaching, and I don't have a lot of friends who aren't either in this teaching or at least have this mindset, whether they're in it or not, even those people have sometimes told me that people, including myself, needs to face the facts when dealing with things like disease and financial problems and work and hurricanes and all this other stuff like Lee was talking about. Now, of course, they tell me this for my own good. They are telling me, all right, because they don't want me to be disappointed, all right, by the danger, when dangers happen and all this. So they try to enlist me in what I call their army of gloom and doomsayers, okay? And when they try to do that, even with the best of intentions, I have learned to simply smile and say, no, thank you, I've served my time there, and I'm not going back, okay? That's the way I answer it. Now, the interesting thing is, these are not bad or foolish people, all right? They're perfectly nice, normal people, which is actually part of the problem. Because they have been raised, as so many of us were, by people just like them who feel that even when things are going really, really well, there's always a strong possibility that disaster may strike at any moment and take it all away. That's how they were raised. Now, the ones who are strongly religious, which is one part of my family, believe that God may take it all away to punish them for something they did or didn't do, or to test them or to teach them a lesson. And those who don't believe in God, which is another part of my family, I got it all covered, okay, simply believe that the world is a dangerous place where even the best laid plans often fall apart for reasons that we could never have foreseen, sort of the proverbial black swan event. In other words, they see the world as a house of cards, which is part of the title of my talk today, that could collapse at any moment from the slightest breeze or some minor mishap caused by carelessness or any other kind of destructive behavior, either their own or anybody else's. Now, the sad part of it is, all right, their concerns about the future are not illusions, okay? They are 100% accurate for them. For them, okay? Not because of the state of the world or because of any dangers that exist, but because of the state of their consciousness. Because of the state of their consciousness. Their beliefs have created a world around them and attracted situations to them that are extremely frightening, but for them, quite real. And even though they'd like to protect themselves from all the potential problems in the world, this is the part they don't understand. Their lives and what they've created are based on solid mental and spiritual principles that they themselves are setting in motion. Now, they don't realize it, but their daily experiences are being created out of a combination of fears, assumptions, false beliefs, and ignorance, all of them coming from their consciousness, from their mind. All right? So it's no wonder that maybe their body or their marriage or their relationship or their portfolio or their job all seem to them to be on the edge of collapse so much of the time, because they expect problems to occur. And the only way they know how to deal with the problems that they face, that we all tend to face, okay, which they themselves have created, is to blame someone else, to anesthetize themselves through alcohol, drugs, or something else, or to keep manipulating things this way and that, trying to hold it all together, which takes an awful lot of time and an awful lot of energy that could be better spent doing things they enjoy or spending time with people they love. Now, I love this phrase, a house of cards. I also love the TV program. Any House of Cards fans out there? Okay, cool. That did not originate this phrase. I'm sure you all know. But it's very appropriate for what we're talking about here, because a house of cards is used to describe something that takes a long time to create, but it can collapse in an instant because it has no foundation and no stability. Let me tell you a personal story. I don't do it often, so listen to this one. Okay. When I was around 12 years old, which was 1962, all right, I had accumulated over 4,000 baseball cards. Anybody else baseball card collectors here? Two, three, not a lot. Okay, that's all right. And mine dated back to the mid-1950s, all right. I had Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris. I had Willie Mays. I had Frank Robinson. I had Roberto Clemente, Harmon Killebrew. Some of you are going, who are these people? Well, anyway, at the time, they were very famous. I had all the team cards for that time period from a number of different years. Unfortunately, when I went away to college, my mother figured she'd save them, so she stuffed them in some brown grocery bags and stuck them up in the attic of our house in Florida. So about 4 years later, when I was finishing college and realized that all of a sudden these things, somebody mentioned it, might have some value, I went up to retrieve them, and every single card was a soggy, bug-infested, moldy mess. Every single bit of it, which kind of broke my heart, because when I checked on eBay a couple years later, they would have been worth, at a minimum, $20,000 to $30,000 at the time. Now, anyway, that's something that I've never recovered from, so just tuck that story back in. Anyway, that's not the story. That's not the story. But you were caught up in it, weren't you? One rainy morning during the summer, so we were out of school. I have a sister who's 3 years older than me and some younger brothers. She and I pulled out all the baseball cards. This was before they became a soggy mess. And we decided that we were going to build a house of cards in the living room. Okay? So, you know how you do that? You sort of put them together like a tent, then you put two next to it like a tent, and you put one on top. Then you make another little tent, and you put one on top, and you sort of build whatever you want to do. So we were in the middle of the living room on the bare, we have terrazzo floors at our house in Florida, and we were sort of back to back, and I started building my side, and she started building her side back over there. And so two cards, one on top. Again and again, and then we joined ours on the side as we went around. 1 hour, 3 hours, 6 hours, okay? We did it in a certain, it looked like the Colosseum in Rome, okay, with us and the bags of cards inside and building it all around us. One layer, then 2 layers, then 4 layers, all the way up to 10 or 12 layers, so it was about 3 feet high or more, all the way around us and about 6 or 7 feet across. You get the picture, the whole circle and the two of us in there. Now, my parents, who had been watching us through this process, were very impressed. They'd come in a little more often. My little brothers were absolutely amazed, but we wouldn't let them near it. We had to keep them back, you know, on the other side. So my parents went and got the neighbors, and they came with their Polaroid cameras, remember those? And they were taking pictures, and they'd wait for them to develop them, flap them in the air like they used to do. And we had one of those pictures until, you know, a number of years ago. I don't know where it is now. We wouldn't allow anyone to come close because they might bump it. We wouldn't allow anyone to open the front door because a breeze might have done something, okay? It was very impressive. It was a very impressive accomplishment. But around dinner time, it started to get old. And now we had a dilemma, okay? We couldn't get out. No one could walk through the living room, because, and the living room was in the middle of the house, okay, and yours truly had to pee, okay? Now, but we had put so much time and so much energy into doing this, we couldn't bear to knock it down, so we were stuck. We were stuck. So we were arguing about how to do it. Maybe they could put a bench, you know, a footstool kind of in there, and we could stand up and they could help us step over and we could leave it out, you know. And while we're arguing about all this stuff, somebody let the dog into the house. Okay? So he came up very quietly while we were kind of stuff, and he sniffed it and he pushed it gently with his nose, and in a matter of seconds, whole thing was just a pile of baseball cards all over again. So first we screamed, then we cried, then we laughed, then we picked up the cards, and we never did it again. But we had pictures, okay? So it's great. Now, the reason I bring this up is because sometimes that's how we create different parts of our life, all right? We do it very carefully and very deliberately, trying to control every little circumstance, not letting anybody else get involved or to make decisions because they might mess it up. Or else we just pile decisions one on top of the other, on top of the other, on top of the other, without thinking about where those decisions are coming from or how they interact with all the other parts of our life. Then when we end up with whatever crazy, impressive, disastrous life situation that comes out of our decisions, we still feel the need to protect our creation. We're trying to protect our ego, protect it from the most innocent or minor intrusion, because the results of letting anybody in or changing anything could be disastrous. Now, I know people, and so do most of you. I'm sure nobody in this room, but we all know people out there, okay, who are living such an unhappy and unstable and unsustainable lifestyle that the only thing holding it together is alcohol or Prozac. Okay, and even if we're not that bad, okay, that extreme, we all have areas that could use some attention. Now, let's look at our work life, for instance, or what Dr. Holmes used to call creative expression instead of the word work, which I liked, but the truth is far too many people in the world are spending years in jobs that are neither creative nor self-expressive. That's a fact. So what we do, theoretically, is we spend this one-third of our life doing something to share our talents, to experience self-worth, and to bring value to the world so that we can receive value in return. At least that's the theory, all right? That's the way this one part of our life should operate. Our job, our career, whatever it happens to be, doctor, lawyer, you know, homemaker, volunteer, airplane pilot, whatever it happens to be, should be, I say again, should be based on a firm foundation of personal expression, joy, satisfaction, and a sense of contributing to the world. And somewhere inside, we all know this. When we get up and go to work or start turn on our computer at home, we know this. But what do we do if our outside is not reflecting what we would like to have on the inside? How do we handle that, okay? What our higher self knows that we really want to be doing? Well, in most cases, what we do is we try to fill the hole we feel inside by working longer hours, by making more money, by getting promoted, or whatever it happens to be, okay? But we keep on building this structure until we feel trapped, until we feel trapped. We can't leave because we're making too much money or because it's the only job we know how to do. That's what we think. So we go home every night, unhappy and unfulfilled. We drink a couple of glasses of wine or a couple of bottles of wine, depending on the job, okay? We watch a few hours of mindless television. Then we go to bed feeling resentful that tomorrow morning we have to get up and do it all over again. Some of you are retired and laughing right now, but, you know, some of you are not, okay? Now, that kind of lifestyle will eventually drain us of our desire to live a satisfying life if it doesn't kill us first, which is why, as most of you have probably heard, Monday morning at 9 o'clock has a higher incidence of heart attacks in the United States than any other time of the week, okay? So if our heart isn't in what we're doing, it's going to attack us. It's kind of what it does, all right? That's kind of what it does. And also, we'll be so unhappy that we drive away the people that we love, and that's when things start to fall apart. That's when they start to fall apart. Now, the breakdown may start very small, but it progresses very, very quickly. This happens in relationships too. Okay, we get into most of our relationships in the beginning with expectations gleaned from our past, from our role models, who in most cases are our parents. And in my case, that was not a good idea, I can tell you that. But it's all we know when we're first starting out. So we get into a relationship and we sort of adjust our behavior, our actions to fit our expectations of what a relationship's supposed to look like, okay? And we expect the other person to alter their behavior based on what we expect a relationship to look like. And meanwhile, they're doing the same thing to us. And pretty soon, the whole thing is so unstable based on what we think is supposed to be the way it works instead of the way it really works that the tiniest argument or misunderstanding gets blown totally out of proportion. And once again, everything comes unraveled. Now, the Bible, the Christian Bible, talks about this. It talks about the danger of building a house on sand instead of on a firm foundation. If you try to make the house stronger, it still doesn't help, right? It still doesn't help because the ground under it is unstable. So here's the message of that verse. And most Bible verses have a real world message if we don't get too caught up in the language. In our life, your life, my life, the only foundation that holds over the long run is a spiritual foundation based on trust, intelligence, and knowledge. And love, of course. You can't leave that out. In other words, a relationship that's not built on a firm foundation of unconditional love and mutual respect will not last. It won't. I don't care how many hobbies you have in common. I don't care if you go to church or the opera together. I don't care how good the sex is. It just won't hold together. In the same way, if we accept a job just because it pays us a lot of money and we don't resonate with what we're doing every day, no matter how much money we're being paid, it's not going to be enough. It just will not be enough. So let's talk about this for a second from the perspective of the law of cause and effect. I talk about that a lot. Whenever I use that term, which I do, I want you to remember what we're talking about here is spiritual cause and material effect, okay? Inner cause and outer effect. Invisible cause and visible effect. Because the creative cause of every experience comes from the spiritual. It comes from the invisible to the visible, all right? And decisions that are made from a spiritual place are always very clear and very simple. Very, very simple. They really are. In fact, that's the only way we can really tell if a decision that we're making is coming from a spiritual place. If a decision in any part of our life, large or small, seems difficult, if we're struggling to make the decision, that's only because we're listening to the world, we're listening to the radio, like Lee was saying, or whatever it is out there, instead of listening to what's in here, instead of listening to our inner wisdom. Spirit, by which I mean the invisible creative process, okay, always speaks from intelligence and feeling, from thought and emotion, but its most valuable characteristic is simplicity. It's simplicity. Whenever we have a choice to make, the best answer is always the least complicated one. Love works and fear doesn't. Honesty works and lying doesn't. Generosity works and greed doesn't. Peace works and anger doesn't. Joy works and apathy doesn't. Always, always, always. When we make a choice, or try to create a certain outcome, and we find ourselves getting very manipulative about how we got to do this and who knows what and who doesn't know what and all this stuff that we have to do, that should tell us something. It really should. If we have to lie to ourselves about what we love and what we don't, if we have to hold back information from people we love or tell them partial truths so we don't get found out, if we keep secrets and don't express ourselves openly and we don't admit our mistakes, all because we don't want things to get shaken up, okay, we are building a house of cards. We are building a house of cards. And all it takes is one mistake, one slip of the tongue, one moment of truth, and it all falls down. So the question I have, to make this relevant, which if it's not, what's the point? Why do we put ourselves through this? Why do we put ourselves through this when all we have to do to make our life work better is to be who we are, to allow other people to be who they are, and to share love, respect, kindness, and compassion, which are all love words, with everyone all the time. That's all we have to do, okay? It's really that simple. The truth is, this extremely intelligent universe that we live in has been designed to support life beautifully in every way, including supporting us and supporting our life. I mean, the laws of the universe work very, very well, whether it's the physical laws like electricity and gravity and those things, or the spiritual laws like attraction and giving and receiving and non-resistance and all the other spiritual laws. Now, we may not know exactly why they work the way they do, just like I don't know why the cards hold up the way they do when I'm building a house of cards, but they do work, and we can all figure out how to work them. For example, look at the tools that we have been given to enjoy this beautiful world that's all around us, okay? And look at what we're doing with those tools, all right? Look at our body, for instance. Let's talk about the physical, all right? We can see a rainbow. I saw a couple driving back in Oregon, back to the airport, absolutely gorgeous the other day. We can hear a symphony. Our ears, that's what we have them for. We can hear a baby laughing. We can feel the sun on our face. We can smell the honeysuckle or taste a peach or a strawberry. We can walk, okay? We can hold the people we love. That's what arms and legs are for, all right? We can dance and we can sing. At least some of us can. I can't, but, you know, I'm sure a few of you can. I mean, that's how we've been designed. Very, very simply, to enjoy life. And it's all very easy and it's all very uncomplicated. But from the moment we are able to make our own decisions, most of us abuse our body on a regular basis. We do. We ruin our hearing with, you know, ultra-loud speakers stuffed in our ear while we're working on the steering machine. We abuse our listening by hanging around whiny people or listening to talk radio. That's kind of another way of doing it. We use caffeine, which is a poison. I drink coffee, so don't, you know, to sort of wake us up. And then we use alcohol or pills, which are a poison, to let us down later in the day. We eat sugar to make ourselves feel satisfied, and then we take vitamins to make up for it. Okay. Guilty? Anybody? Okay, good. One other person besides me. We eat unhealthy food, and we don't exercise until our body is unable to do the things that we wanted to do, like walk or run or play or hike, whatever it is. Or else we eat nuts and twigs and we overexercise and refuse to allow ourselves to enjoy life's little pleasures like chocolate, you know, those kind of things. I mean, if this is what we're doing, the bad news is no one is going to come along and save us from ourselves. No one is going to come along. But the good news is we don't need anybody else. We already have everything we need to fix whatever problems we may have created with our own body. And even if we don't do anything, our body is very simple. It will simply react to whatever we are doing or not doing, but we may not like the way that looks. We may not like it, okay? Now, money's another tool. Talk about a house of cards. We borrow money to buy a house. Then we borrow against the house to buy an SUV. Then we use the SUV to drive to the mall, where we use our American Express card to buy things we don't want and don't need because we aren't happy with the rest of our life, all right? Then when it comes time to pay the bills, we pay off our American Express with our MasterCard. You can't do that now, but you used to be able to, okay? Now, we don't worry about saving because that's a long time in the future. Besides, we have Social Security, which is not very secure, I'm here to tell you, okay? We have an insurance card. You know where all that stuff's going, okay? We also have an AARP card, if you're old enough, okay, to get us great deals, all right? Which all sounds great till you run the numbers and you realize that even in a spiritual world, there's no such thing as a free lunch. There just isn't, okay? Now, some of you remember the song. It was the Bobby Fuller 4, I Fought the Law and the Law Won. Remember that song, okay? Well, in this case, the law we're talking about is the law of cause and effect. It's the law of cause and effect. The creative process that we are all a part of will always create what we deeply believe to be true, not what we wished we believed was true, which is a very big difference. Now, I'm not trying to pick on anybody here, all right? I'm simply trying to show how when we make things too complicated and try to keep things working in an unbalanced or unnatural way, eventually it catches up with us. Eventually it catches up with us. Either our willpower fails, we can't just keep things working the same way, or our energy runs out, or we have to go to the bathroom, whatever, you know, something comes in that interrupts, all right? When we become clear about how life works, And we begin to move in harmony with the positive and relaxed nature of life. Not only will things become easier, they work better. They actually work better. We don't have to hold things together or prop them up because they're able to stand on their own. They have a base. They have a foundation that we have given to them. They're not built on sand. Now, we can see this happening everywhere we look. When we treat our body well, it heals quickly. Very, very true. And it always has plenty of energy to do what we want it to do. When we eat well, which includes plenty of chocolate, trust me, okay? When we sleep enough, which includes naps, naps are very important, we feel better. When we slow down and smell the flowers, and we both give and receive hugs on a regular basis, we're happier. Now, that's not magic. That's not magic. That's common sense, which is a natural result of a life based on consistent spiritual practice and sound spiritual principles. That's what it's based on. In the same way, when we do work that we love without worrying about money or recognition, those things take care of themselves. There's a great book from years ago, a classic called Do What You Love, The Money Will Follow. A woman by the name of Marcia Sinatar, very interesting lady. I've been to a couple talks of hers. Doing the work we love is not just a suggestion for enjoying life more. It is a spiritual imperative. It is a spiritual imperative. Otherwise, everything becomes more difficult. Our health gets stressed. Our relationships get strained. We forget how to enjoy our money, no matter how much we have. Even our time off becomes less satisfying because we know that we're going to have to go back to work. It affects everything. Everything affects everything else. Now, living a simpler life, I'm not going back to the 60s where it says get rid of everything but a cot and a few dishes, you know, not that kind of thing. Living a simpler life means taking a new look, as in new thought, which is what this teaching is, taking a new look at all those things that make life complicated, most of which we built in the first place. So simplifying means making amends to people that we have harmed. Some of you 12-step people would recognize that. It means being completely honest with ourselves and everyone else about everything. Not complicated, okay? It means saying no when we need to say no. All right, it means doing more and more of the things we love and less of the things we don't. I mean, how hard is that, right? How hard is that? At the same time, it also may mean, this is where it gets a little more complicated, letting go of a lifestyle and people and practices that are not serving us well. It may mean changing our spiritual practice. It may mean changing our friends. It may mean changing our beliefs and our priorities. Changing these things that we have constructed over years. Now, that may not be easy in the beginning, but I promise you, over the long haul, it's worth it. It really, really is. You see, that sense of ease that we feel when we're no longer afraid that everything in our life is going to collapse around our ears is so profound that it's hard to believe we stayed stuck for so long once we break ourselves free. The amount of freedom and energy that we feel when we are finally able to look up, to open our eyes, and to see the world instead of always looking down in fear or despair or waiting for the other shoe to drop, that's a gift. That is a gift. It's a gift that we accept from Spirit, from God, from life. That's where the gift comes from, but we have to claim it. Nobody's going to force it on us or stick it in our pocket. We have to claim the gift. The wonderful thing is once we do and we find ourselves standing firmly on solid ground instead of on shifting sand, we can then begin to move forward confidently with a lighter step. And the amount of love, the amount of prosperity, the amount of health, the amount of joy, personal fulfillment, all those things that we begin to feel all the time will allow us to share those gifts with the rest of the world. And in the process of that sharing, we will be doing our part to create a more wonderful world for us all. This is the truth in your life. And this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's just take a moment. A lot of words, a lot of ideas. Take the ones that serve you well, set aside the others. Simply allow yourself to be open in this moment, open to a greater idea, open to a greater awareness, recognizing that life is not what happens. Life is what creates what happens. The life that I am living is a life that I myself have created, and the life I am going to be living years from now begins in this moment. The decisions I make, the feelings I choose to support, the feelings I choose not to support, the decisions I decide not to make, all support me in building. But as I build carefully. I don't build with cards. I build with bricks. But these bricks represent spiritual power. They represent confidence. They represent love. They represent mutual support. All these things that I know make my life better and make the lives of those around me better too. So as I know this, and I am building structures that are firm, I build them from a spiritual place. I build my health with an awareness and appreciation for this amazing body that I have. I build my wealth intelligently, recognizing that there are laws of prosperity that have worked since time began that I can use. I build my job, my work, my career from a place of love, not just love for myself, which is important, but also love for the world that I live in and what I can contribute. And I create the structures of my relationships out of a deep sense of kindness, a deep sense of respect, a deep sense of appreciation when someone honors me with their love. So I return love when it is given, but I give love whether it's returned or not. Knowing this, my life is simplified. It is beginning to reflect and begins to reflect the deep sense of joy in life that I feel. And I am grateful. I'm grateful for all that I have been given and all that I have yet to give. I am grateful for the opportunity to experience life and to experience this beautiful world and to experience love. In gratitude for all these things, I take these ideas firmly in consciousness, allow them to be the truth for me from this moment on, releasing them into the universe, letting them do their good and perfect work. Please join me in saying, and so it is.